Okay, so this class is about how to do a daily practice. And so far we've talked about a couple of the basics. One is to do it, meaning if you don't do a daily practice daily, it doesn't work much. It's like jogging or weightlifting or learning a musical instrument or something like that. You have to try to do it every single day. If you start missing days, then I can tell you from experience, my own experience over many years, that it just starts to break, and then there's 6 months that you don't do it and stuff like that. You have to do it every single day. Otherwise, it just doesn't work, and your mind is strange. Your mind wants to get enlightened, and your mind doesn't want to do a daily meditation, you know? It'll just keep fighting with you, and then you have to keep tricking it. And the best way is to do it at the same time every day. So you have to try to do it at the same time. Most people find morning is good, and it's very important to try to do it at the same time. Then it's like your mind gets used to, this is the time when I meditate, and your mind will keep doing it. The place should be very beautiful. The place should be dedicated to meditation. So it doesn't work to meditate on your bed or something like that. That's dedicated for sleeping. And your mind will, when you get on your bed or you try to sit up and meditate on your bed, your mind is used to sleeping and it won't come out nice. I can tell you that from experience also. It doesn't work. So you need to have a dedicated place in your house. There should be a kusung tukten, and we talked about it in the Friday night class. Lord Atisha, 1,000 years ago, when he taught the Tibetans how to do their daily practice, which he did, he talked about setting up an altar, and we went through that the last Friday class. So if you can, try to catch the Friday class. I think there won't be one this Friday, right? But it'll start the following Friday. And you can hear Lord Atisha's description of how to do your daily practice. He designed one for the Tibetans based on the ancient Indian practices, and that became the standard in Tibet. And so you can hear it. We're going through his original text that he wrote for the Tibetans. So the important thing is to get yourself to do it every day. I think it's hard to do it every day unless something's happening. You see what I mean? If the meditation isn't going well, pretty quickly, then you get bored or you don't like it. You know what I mean? And so I thought today we would concentrate on, we'll do a little bit more about the preliminaries, which is important. But then I thought we would just straight go into some meditative techniques. Because if you're having a good time meditating, you'll probably like to get up and do it every day. And if you're having trouble meditating, then you'll figure out a way not to do it. So it should be fun, and there should be neat things happening in your meditation. So we'll go first through some of the preliminaries, and then we'll go straight to some tricks about how to meditate properly. Make sure the back of your seat is higher than the front, okay? And there should be something comfortable under your ankle bone, okay? If your ankle is straight on the ground, it's probably not good. All right, there should be something under your ankle, even if you have to roll up your socks or something like that. Personally, I can't wear any kind of sweater, or I even take off my overshirt, because if you get warm, it's very bad for meditation. You get sleepy. So if you have a sweater on or something, you might want to... Just my own suggestion. I find that I get sleepy. It's good to have a nice, quiet place to meditate. Generally, it's good to try to meditate in a place that's quiet, okay? So you should have an altar in your room. There should be a corner of the room that you dedicate to your meditation. If you have a place that's big enough, which nobody I know does, should be a separate room with an altar. Should be a picture of a holy being there. Should be a holy book there if you have one. and then something to represent the mind of a Buddha. Usually it's a little stupa, but something like that. And then put out some nice offerings every morning. And your mind doesn't want to do that either. And then get into it, you know, get into offering something nice. I met a couple of students of mine who said, I asked, how much do you meditate? They said, 1 hour every morning, you know. And I said, does that include the preliminaries or not? They say, that includes the preliminaries. And I said, well, how long do you spend on the preliminaries? And they said, 45 minutes. You know, and, I'm not kidding, okay. Generally, make it, whatever your preliminaries are, make it like less than a quarter of the time, okay? I mean, the main time should be given to meditation. It takes about, you know, 20 minutes to get into meditation, even after you start, after you finish the preliminaries, just to get the mind slowed down. So don't let the preliminaries take up the whole time. Okay? The preliminaries are very, very important, and you must do them. But have a sense of proportion. If you're only meditating for 45 minutes, then don't give more than 10 minutes for the preliminaries, okay? And then just speed them up. Posture, the right, if you do a half lotus, right foot should be on the left thigh, on top of the left thigh, okay? If you do a full lotus, which is so painful that it's going to distract from your meditation, for most people, it would be a left foot in first and then the right foot over that, okay? Left hand goes down first, all right? And then the right hand, like that. Okay. If you do a full lotus, the bottoms of your feet are up on top of your thighs and they hold your hands just right so that your thumbs, if you push them in towards you, they touch your belly button, okay? That's ideal. If your thumbs are hitting way down like an inch or two below your belly button, try something to keep your hands up off of your lap. See, if you were doing a full lotus, the legs would be there, the feet would be there. But otherwise, put something in your lap. Okay, I carry this around and I put that in my lap. Okay, cats work pretty good if they're sleeping. Okay, we have some really good ones here. And then back should be straight. There's a trick if you know it. You keep the back straight and then you bend forward. You lean forward just very slightly. Okay, so try it that way. If you tend to go too far back, then your back will start hurting. And if you bend forward just slightly, it keeps your back straight. Okay, and again, the back of your butt should be higher than the front. If you have trouble with your knees, sit in a chair is fine, or stick them out is fine. Okay, but if you are meditating the whole 45 minutes on your knees because they hurt so much, then that defeats the purpose of meditation. So if there's a problem, if it's painful, then forget it and just put your legs out, okay? I'll go through a few preliminaries, but not all of them, okay? And then, because I want to spend a lot more time meditating today. So first, by the way, eyes closed or open doesn't matter. If you open them, tilt them down like that, and don't focus them on anything, you know? Keep them focused. Unfocused around here, like when you're thinking about that lady you saw in the restaurant, you know, and you're like, you know, and your eyes are not focused on anything. You see what I mean? And that's the idea, is that your eyes are just. We do it like that, you know. It's just your eyes are just unfocused. Okay. There's texts that say watch your nose, and it's a mistranslation of a text that says keep your eyes unfocused on the plane of your nose. You know what I mean? Around here. So that's just a translation mistake. If you're more comfortable, then close your eyes. People ask me, should you stare at something? Absolutely not. Okay, that's not meditation. Meditation is in the advanced stages of meditation, you should withdraw from your sense organs. So you wouldn't be seeing anything or hearing anything or smelling anything. The idea that you should stare at a picture or stare at the wall or stare at a light is not meditation. That was discussed in the meditation manual since ancient India and rejected by all responsible writers. And I can show you the references, okay? So meditation is a mental exercise. And when you get to the highest levels of meditation, it's even more mental and your sense organs ideally should be shut down.
Okay.
You're not focusing on any outer objects. It's all inside.
Okay.
Okay, so get very comfortable, and we'll do about half an hour. All right. So make sure you're comfortable. After you take your position, don't move. Okay? So if you have a problem with your knee, stick your legs out. If you have to sit in a chair, sit in a chair. Okay? And don't be proud about it. I mean, if your body hurts, you can't meditate. The point is to get your body out of the picture by parking it nicely. And if the parking is something that hurts you, then it defeats the purpose, you know? We're going to leave your body. So just put it somewhere where it's not going to bother you. All right? Then watch your breath. So try not to move, okay? If someone in this room moves now, it disturbs like 10 other people. So get in a comfortable position and then grin and bear it, okay? Master Shantideva said if someone was standing behind you with a gun up to your head and said, if you move in the next half hour, I'll shoot, you would sit perfectly still. The first exercise is to watch your breath. It's not a meditation in itself. It's to get your mind slowed down. And watching it means not to be aware of the colors and shapes of your breath because you can't see it. Watching it means feel the feeling of the air passing the tip of your nose. So you'll feel cold air coming into your nostrils and warm air going out. And pretend you're a little guy who's sitting at the end of the nostril and he's watching the air come and go. And focus on that spot. Okay. And watch your breath for a few minutes. Every time you catch your mind wandering, bring it back gently. It's a great art form to catch yourself wandering. Some people meditate for years and they learn to sit quietly and their mind wanders all over the place. You have to gain the ability to catch yourself when you're wandering and bring yourself back. Don't get upset. Don't feel like you're a lousy meditator. Just quietly catch your mind and bring it back calmly and in a happy way and just say, come on now, come back and put it on your breath again. It'll keep slipping away and keep bringing it back. I'd like to do some breathing meditation. Try to visualize your breath as like a clear liquid moving in and out of your lungs. So like one long piece of clear liquid. And one part is still attached to the bottom of your lungs. And then when you breathe out, the other part is coming out of your nose and going out in front of your face. And this helps a lot to start to breathe properly during meditation. So now try to picture your breath as like clear liquid, like a water. And it's coming in and out of your nose, but the base of it is attached to the bottom of your lungs. And when you breathe out, then the top of it goes out like about 6 inches or 10 inches, and then it stops and it comes back in. But you're always breathing the same liquid in and out of your lungs. The front part comes in and out of your nose. The back part is attached to the bottom of your lungs. But try to picture your breath that way and see the liquid coming out perpendicular to your face, straight out away from your face when you breathe out, and then you suck it back in. So picture your breath that way. Now when you breathe in, try to push the air down a little bit further. Generally, shouldn't force the breath, but now try to feel like you're using the bottom of your lungs. Normally, you don't bring the air all the way in, you're just breathing with half of your lungs. So try to bring the air in more. When you breathe in at the end of the breath, then breathe a little bit more. Don't try to hold your breath, and don't force it like you're going to swim underwater or something like that. Just gently take in a little bit more air than usual and try to breathe a deeper breath than normally you would. Don't try to hold it. Just breathe more deeply and then let it out in a normal flow. And keep watching it. This is good if you get sleepy, okay? Now in the out-breath, do the same thing, which means when you push the air out, imagine it like liquid crystal or some kind of liquid. And when you reach the end of your normal out-breath, then gently push a little more breath out. And you always have a little bit more left inside. And So now on the in-breath, you took a little more breath in. And next on the out-breath, push a little bit more out. And then you have the sensation of the breath going out away from your face. And then send it out another few inches. And then suck it back in. So you'll see the breath come out of your nose and it'll go away from your face like a little stream directly out, like 8 or 10 inches away from your face. And then gently, before you suck the breath back in, then gently push a little more out and try that. So now you're taking a little bit extra on the in-breath and you're pushing a little bit more on the out-breath. This is really good for concentration and it also keeps you fresh. Now, as you breathe, try to be aware of your heartbeat. So keep up the same breath. Don't force anything, but take a little bit deeper breath than normal. Expel more of the air than normal. And then now, see if you can pick up the beating of your heart. Like it'll be, at first, you can feel it in your chest as a tactile object. You know, it's a feeling of sense that you feel the vibration in your chest. And later on, if you get to meditate in a quiet place, you'll hear it in your ears, in your eardrums. Okay? But right now, try to pick it up as a vibration in your chest. Try to be aware of the beating of your heart while you breathe. not try to count how many heartbeats it takes for the breath to go out and how many heartbeats it takes for the breath to come in. Some people count double heartbeats. They hear da-dung, da-dung. And some people count single heartbeats. All they can hear is dunk, dunk, dunk. And it doesn't matter which one, but just according to how you hear your own heart, try to listen carefully or feel carefully and see how many heartbeats it takes for the breath to go out, and then see how many heartbeats it takes for it to come in. Don't hold your breath and don't force your breath. Just let it go naturally. Push a little more out at the end. Take a little more in at the beginning. If they are not equal heartbeats, like if the out-breath takes like 6 heartbeats and the in-breath takes 4, see if you can even them out a little bit. It means normally most people have to slow down the in-breath a little bit. So don't do anything that's uncomfortable, but see if you can slightly slow it down. Normally the in-breath has to be slowed down a little bit. In order that it's the same number of heartbeats as the out-breath. So see if you can, very gently, don't force anything, but most people find that they are breathing in very sharply. And then I think you'll also find that you tend to break the breath. You breathe a little bit and then the breath stops, and you breathe a little bit and the breath stops coming in. And see if you can slow the whole thing down. and bring the breath in a very steady stream without any hiccups in the breath, you know, without any jolts in the breath. It should come in very smooth and in a steady flow. You probably have to slow the whole thing down. See if that brings the heartbeats of the in-breath a little closer to the number of heartbeats of the out-breath. Check it out. Don't try to hold your breath. Now we'll shift the focus from the breath to the object. Watching your breath is taught in the Abhidhamma Kosha. It's one of the earliest books of Buddhism, and it's just a method to get your mind settled down, and then you shift it to an important object. Your breath by itself is not normally an important object. And I think over the centuries, in some countries, those instructions got confused a little bit, and people started focusing only on the breath, and then they never went on to a more meaningful object of meditation. And all of the books, starting with the original book 16 centuries ago, they say it's only for focusing your mind, and then when your mind is settled down, like our minds are settled down now, then you shift the focus to the real object of your meditation. So we're going to do what's called a jogom, and that's a special meditation where you fix your mind on a single object. And we're going to fix your mind on a image of a Buddha. Okay, it doesn't have to be just the Buddha. It can be whatever image is holy to you. So if you feel close to Tara, which is a woman Buddha, then you can start visualizing her. Or if you feel more comfortable with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, you can focus on a mental image of him, or your root lama, or even some earlier teacher from your life like Jesus or Moses or whatever feels holy to you. So pick a being, and we're going to work on that picture. So first decide who's going to be the object of your meditation. It's good once you pick one to stick with it for 6 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks until you get really good at it, and not to skip around. The first step in a jogom is to get the silhouette right. So you don't work on the colors or shapes, you just work on the silhouette. Like, all you can see is the outline of the person, and the inside is black, and then you see some light behind them. So like they're behind a sheer curtain or something. And so try to get the outline of the person right. Okay, get that visualization in your mind of just the outline of the person. Like they're behind a curtain and you can't see who they are, but you can see their outline, their silhouette. And concentrate and get it nice. Now try to get the eyes right, the eyes in the face. Don't color them in yet, just like as if they are sketched in black and white. So just a sketch of their eyes. And try to get the shape of the eyes right and the eyebrows right. And don't worry about the rest. So far you have a silhouette and just the eyes and the eyebrows. Now add the nose. Now the mouth. Now the hair. Now the chest and the arms, but not yet any colors, just the shape of the arms and the chest. Round about now, your butt starts to hurt and your knees start to hurt, and just ignore it. You know, decide that you want to learn to meditate and you have to pay a little price for it, and just ignore it. Try not to move. Now start to fill in the colors of the eyes. Do the legs if you haven't done them. Now fill in the colors of the face and the hair. Now fill in the colors of the rest of the body. Now make them live, you know, see the breath, some breath moving in their chest and feel the warmth coming from their body and their eyes moving slightly. Make sure that the picture is alive. It's not just a painting of a holy being. It's the real thing, and their chest is moving slightly, and you can feel the warmth from their hands, and their eyes are moving slightly at you. And there's glistening of the water in their eyes. And then last thing, fill in the emotions, you know, fill in their emotions. Their emotion is intense love for you. And the being is looking at you with this kind of a look of intense love for you, intense attraction to you. And you feel it in their eyes. So look at their eyes and see it as a reflection of their mind, and they have this intense care for you, that they want you to be happy, and they want to help you, and see, fill that into their eyes. The look of their eyes tells you how they feel, and the corner of their mouth, the way they smile at you, get it right, that they have this intense care about you, and they want you to be happy, and they want you to succeed in your practice. Now shrink the figure, like as if it were going away from you. It gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it's floating in the air in front of your chest. and it's only like an inch high. But still perfect. Then ask the being to come and be in your heart, and they come closer and closer into your heart, and then they melt into your chest, and feel them inside your chest like a little sun. Like you can feel the warmth of them in your chest, and you feel the light inside of you. And imagine that they're inside of you, and that they're going to stay there and bless you. Okay, then relax, okay? Stretch out. Anybody have any questions? It could be about this, or it could be about anything else about Buddhism. Okay, but any questions about this practice, or just any questions in general that you feel like asking? It's okay. My Lama used to say, if you don't ask anything, you must know it perfectly. You know? Yeah. Right. Why is it the same number of heartbeats? Roy asked, why is the out-breath and the in-breath the same? Theoretically, if the same quantity of air is moving in and moving out, it should take the same time, right? I mean, it should take the same number of heartbeats. Theoretically, it's the same amount of air coming in and the same amount of air going out. There's in Buddhism, especially in secret Buddhism, so I can't talk about it much, a principle of inner winds and the inner channels that those winds move through. And it's not your physical breath, but it's closely tied to your physical breath. So there are inner winds that are moving through your body, like energies, and in the higher meditations, you use those energies. They're not your breath, but they're closely linked to your breath. And your mind, your thoughts are closely linked to the energies also, those energies. So, for example, if you're frightened, your breathing changes because your thoughts are linked to the inner winds, and those are linked to your breath. So when you're frightened, your breath changes. When you're angry, your breath changes because the thoughts have changed and the inner winds have changed, and that makes your breathing change. So it's an indication that your emotions are strong, either positive or negative. Like even when you get strong desire, your breath changes, or anger, your breath changes. But these are both an indication that the winds are moving inside the channels in a different way, because they are linked to your thoughts. And one of the objects of meditation, even in the beginning, is to force the reverse. So you force your breath to be normal, meaning same quantity going out, same time, and the same time coming in. When your emotions are disturbed, the in-breath is faster than the out-breath. When you're at peace and you're happy and contented, then the out-breath and the in-breath take almost the same amount of time. So as a preparation for meditation, you can take advantage of that fact by forcing the reverse to happen. So you artificially force the out-breath and the in-breath to be almost equal. And then that makes your mind calm down. So whatever bad emotion, you know, if you tend to be, there are two personality types. I mean, one is more desire-oriented and one is more anger-oriented. And then some of us lucky people have both, you know. But either way, when you meditate, if you get the breath down to where it's almost equal, it forces the mind into a gentle state. And then that prepares you for meditation. So you're taking advantage of the fact that the breath is linked to the inner winds, and those are linked to the thoughts. Normally the thoughts are running your breath. And now you're using the breath to run the thoughts. It's like the tail wagging the dog. Yeah. It's that principle. And then that prepares your mind. It makes your mind sweet and appropriate to go on to meditate. It is not meditation in itself, but it makes your mind, it puts your mind in a gentle mood to meditate. She said, what about object of meditation? Like we did what we call a jogam. And there are three types of meditation recognized in Buddhism. You can say, okay, say chegom, jogom, shargom. Okay, chegom, jogom, shargom. What you normally think of as meditation is called jogom. Jogom means you fix your mind on a picture. And in Buddhism, the idea is that it shouldn't be a tanka, okay? It shouldn't be a flat, two-dimensional, boring thing, all right? The whole idea is to get to a place where, you know, when you visualize your boyfriend or your girlfriend, you're not visualizing their picture. You're visualizing what it's like to be with them, you know? And that's what it should be, something like that. I mean, it shouldn't ever be visualizing a painting. That's really boring and you'll quit. You won't do it every day because it's no fun. Ideally, when you get good at it, by the way, you always start like that. You start with the outline and then you start to fill in designs and then you fill in colors and then you fill in life. You know, breathing, blinking, glistening eye, chest is moving. And then you fill in the warmth, and you can feel the warmth from their body. And then you fill in the smells. Smells are very powerful. Like if you meditate and try to imagine what their body smells like. And then finally you fill in their mind, and you imagine how, you meditate on how their, what their emotions are. And then you have a whole being in front of you. By the way, this is not just some stupid exercise. The point is that later you will meet them. You know, they will actually come to you, and you can touch them, and you can hold their hand, and you can hug them, and they will exist. This is preparing that in your mind. If you understand emptiness, you can understand how this is planting seeds in your mind to meet those beings. And if you keep this meditation up, the whole object is that you meet them later, and you will meet them. And this is like getting your mind used to operating on that level where you can meet them. So the point is of a jogam is eventually you meet those beings and they talk to you and they help you and they drag you off to Buddha paradise, okay? Seriously, that's the whole point. Chegom is the second kind, and that's analytical meditation. It's called problem solving. And this is where you consider a problem in Buddhism, okay? Like The Buddha said that the only thing necessary for the destruction of your life is that you were born. Okay? It doesn't take external force. You don't have to get hit by a car. You don't have to get AIDS. Your birth is the cause of your destruction. It doesn't take an external force. That's hard to really appreciate. And so Chegom means you would get down in meditation posture and you would say, okay, Buddha said that even if my body sat here in this position for the next 20 years, eventually it would kill itself because it started. Now, how does that work exactly? And then you take a problem and you discuss it in your mind. And it should be like a debate. It should be like two parts of your mind. You should let it flow like a dialectic, you know? Let one side of your mind be the stupid side and one side of your mind will be the smart side, because it's always going like that anyway, right? And stupid side says, I don't see the point, you know? Of course you have to get hit by a car before you die. And then the other side says, no, you know, think about it. You know, if you just sat there, sooner or later your heart would stop. Well, then the stupid mind says, well, that doesn't mean that just getting born kills you. And then the other side says, yeah, but, well, how does your heart start? And you have a discussion in your mind. And it should sound like that. You should let both sides have a chance to talk. There's a little angel and a little devil, right? And they're like, and people have written texts like that. The first Panchen Lama wrote a beautiful text on emptiness called Dangzin Changdip. And it's a devil and the angel in the guy's mind, and they're fighting with each other. And that's a Chegom. Okay. And you take a problem and you rip it apart. And that's called problem-solving meditation. The last one, sometimes you call it analytical. The last is called Shargom. And Shargom means you go through a certain steps of a Buddhist concept over and over in the same order. For example, there are 9 death meditations. There are 9 steps of death meditation. And you just keep doing them over and over again, you know. Like on Monday, you go through all 9 slow in the same order. And then on Tuesday, you go through them again. And you take like an hour. And then on Wednesday, you go through it again. And you keep that up for a whole month. Sometimes you do a whole like we do sometimes a whole 1 month retreat. You close yourself in a room, you know, have somebody bring you food. And you keep doing the same death meditation over and over and over again. And I've heard this thing where Western psychologists think that when kids learn a language, it's good for them because new pathways are established in their mind somehow, you know, like, By learning a new language, they get certain pathways are built or bridges are built in their mind that makes their mind more intelligent later on. And that's the same idea. Shargom is that you keep going over it and over it again until there's a new thought pattern is established in your mind and it stays there. And then 10 years later, it starts to affect you strongly. And it's building those seeds in your mind by thinking about the same. It's called review meditation. And you go through the same steps like 1,000 times. It's like in the books they say, this is like what you do with the person at work that you don't like. Because every day you review the same reasons why you don't like them, you know. You know, you know, all the times they harmed you. All the times they said something to you. They forgot what they said a long time ago. But you're doing Shargom every day, you know. And you're making sure that bad karma is firmly planted in your mind, you know, by reviewing every day all the harms, all the wrongs they did you, you know, over and over again. That's called a bad Shargom. Okay? And the scriptures say that there's 2 kinds of Shargoms. So those are the 3 objects. The purpose of Shargom is to plant seeds that will actually change the way you think later. The purpose of Chegom is to remove doubts that you have about Buddhist ideas. The purpose of Jogom is that sooner or later you would meet these beings face to face because you planted the seeds in your mind. Okay, and those are the 3 objects. And they're all sexy. You can pick anyone you want, you know. The idea is to stick with one for a couple of weeks until it gets strong. And then just before it gets boring, move on to a different one. Okay, just before it gets dry, then move on to a different one. It's a little boring to try to picture the Buddha for 6 months, you know. And the texts say that. You know, do it for a couple weeks, and then when it gets strong, but before it gets boring, move on. Okay, yeah. She says, can you do jogom about a concept? Yeah, normally when you do a chegom, a problem-solving meditation, you're supposed to, towards the end of the session, you're supposed to decide, okay, my birth is what kills me. And then you fix your mind on that for like 5 more minutes or something. That's a typical conclusion to a chegom is a jogom. So you can fix your mind on a concept, but only after you've decided that it's true. So you spend like 40 minutes arguing about it in your own mind, and then you spend 5 minutes fixing your mind on that. Okay, it's true. It's gonna kill me. You know, my birth is gonna kill me. And then you fix your mind on that for like 5 minutes. Yeah. That would be start as it. She asked about some other class we're having, which is we're discussing concepts or qualities like carness or houseness or personness, and thinking about it or considering it would be a kind of chegom. Like what you're really asking is dependent origination. So, you know, exploring how dependent origination works would be a chegom. Once you get to a conclusion, fixing your mind on it and watching how it works would be a jogom. And then 3 weeks later, remembering what you understood and running it back in your mind over and over again would be shagum. So you don't lose it. You know, they say, by the way, there's a bodhisattva vow that you must review whatever ideas you've had about emptiness every day, or every day actually. Okay? You have to go over them every day, whatever you understand. Even if you don't understand much, whatever you did understand, you're supposed to review it. I think it's bodhisattva vow. Anyway, it's one of those vows. Say again? See what? She says it's difficult to get a perfect picture. This is a matter of practice. A perfect picture, I think, like, you know, when you enjoy a certain kind of food, or, you know, and frankly, you know, when you're trying to decide what restaurant to go to, you do a jogom, and you're visualizing what you might eat there. I did it this evening. Me and Perella went to a really good time. And, you know, she said, where do you want to go? So I'm like jogoming, you know. Spaghetti, you know. And when you say spaghetti, you're already, that is a jogom. And you get the things that you really enjoy. Forget it. You do pretty, it's pretty clear. People that you really like, it's pretty clear in your mind. You know, and this is just getting, I think it's important to realize that when you do a jogom, you should enjoy the object. You know, I mean, this is an enlightened being that you're going to meet later. And they're going to be your lifetime companion and friend. They're going to drag you off to Buddha paradise. So enjoy it, you know, like make them really, really sweet, and they should smell like whatever, gardenias for me, I don't know about you, your favorite smell, and they're just the most beautiful face you can imagine. And just, I think a lot of people, there's so many American Buddhist practices, like, they feel like an obligation. In Tibetan, they say, tel mare. It means this is not a tax imposed by the government, you know. This is a pleasure. This is an honor. This is a good way to spend your lifetime, you know. And fantasize and enjoy it. And then keep in mind that this is someone you're going to meet later on. And it's a fantastic karma that you can even imagine what they're going to be like, you know. By the way, they're always much better than the picture. But it's a start, you know. And you have to visualize spaghetti before you go and get it, you know. And same thing with these people. The exercise is to imagine what they're going to be like, because that makes them happen. Okay. It puts a seed in your mind to them. Yeah. She said, does it matter that you don't get the details properly? I have a drawing by Tijan Rinpoche. This is, he's right here. This is our root lama's root lama, who was the teacher of the Dalai Lama. And he passed away in 1981. But I have a picture. Some Westerner came and said, could you draw a Buddha for me? And he took the paper and he went, you know, and he just gave it to them. And I have this in my house and it's perfect, you know. And he was not an artist, you know, but he was meditating on this picture for years, you know. And it's exquisite, you know. And it's not like a te, you know, it's not a tax. It means try to make it. You'll get it perfect because if you figure out how much you enjoy it. You see what I mean? Like, you have a pretty good visualization of the person you like the most in this life because you love them, you know. And it's not like somebody said, you better have a good visualization of this person, you know. It's just you enjoy thinking about them. Every time you think about them, there's more detail and you remember nice things about them and how they feel, how they smell, how they talk to you, you know, how they smile, what their eyes look like. You know, it's not like someone's forcing you to visualize it. And just, I think the main thing is if you get into enjoying them, then naturally you'll get all the details right. And if you feel like it's a te, you know, if it's like, oh, you know, the guru's going to beat you up if you, you know, if you don't picture this leg right, you know, then it's no fun. You know, it should be really that you have a crush on these guys and you want to visualize them nice, you know, should be just enjoyable. It should be like fantasizing about your boyfriend or something, you know, because this is better. You know, you will meet them and they will take you and you can make them beautiful and happy and enlightened and all that. Yeah. Maybe, okay, one more question, then we'll stop. It's sort of auspicious. He said, how does it affect your everyday life to think about these beings? I mean, you have to study emptiness, you know. And if you study emptiness carefully, and if you study karma, which if you stick around this place, sooner or later you'll have to study it, okay? You will find out how it is completely logical that one day you will meet these beings and you will be in first-hand contact with them. I mean, if you study emptiness long enough and karma, you won't doubt that. You'll know that that's true. Okay. Ultimately, the way the pictures in your mind determine your future reality, okay? Like, excuse me? Yeah, by the way, the definition of karma, fourth chapter, Abhidharma Kosha, Vasubandha, 350 AD, Lele Jikten Natsuke, Dini Semba Dande Che, Semba Yigile Yino, Deje Ngatan Yigile, Ngatan Lugile. The definition of karma is thought. You see, every time you think, you create karma. And you think, you know, 65 many thoughts per finger snap. You're having 65 discrete impressions in the time it takes me to snap my fingers. You're creating 65 karmic events every second. And each one creates part of your future. So if you go around thinking about business all the time, which I'm good, you know, I did it. I worked in a corporation for 16 years. I was a vice president, you know. 1,500 people there. It creates the seed in your mind to keep thinking about business. And then all the world is business, you know. I used to get on a bus and somebody would sit next to me with a diamond ring and I'd be like that, you know. And and they would go like that. And whatever you choose to think about now is what your future will be. And if you... Basically, you can either choose objects which are going to be death, or you can choose objects which are going to be a Buddha paradise for you later. And it's okay to do business to eat. But in general, the more you can put your mind on holy objects, then you won't have to die a normal death like that. I mean, your reality will start to change. Whatever you put your mind on now, that's going to come back to you later. And your mind is... According to Buddhism, your mind is determining your future. You know, what you will see a year from now in New York City, how you experience New York City, is created by what you think about now. This year, like 1999 New York City for you, will be directly related to the way you think now in 98. So the whole object is to think about very, very holy, beautiful objects. And then it actually changes your reality in the future. And because things are empty. And you have to study that. But it works. It really works. Okay. Yeah. I don't get what you mean. Like if you're going down the street in New York, and today it happened to me, I was over near Broadway. Broadway and Great Jones or something like that. There's always this honey roasted peanuts being roasted there, you know. And you get this big wind coming past you, you know, and it's like, you know, like that's a good thing, you know. But then on Broadway, normally there's too many people and somebody's bumping into you or something, and then that's a bad. So I think what you're saying is, when did I create the bump? How many years ago? And when did I create the smell of the peanuts? You know, how many? Is that what you mean? Like, how do you?
Even the ability to meditate, you could say, would be a projection forced on you by your previous karma.
That's correct, yeah. Well, the fact that you're alive and in a Buddhism class means that, I mean, and I'm quite serious, already you are one in a million. You know, there are 249,999,000 other people who could care less about meditation. So the fact that you're trying already means you're an extraordinarily virtuous person. You know, you have extraordinary karma. If you're in the United States and you're hearing about this stuff, then you're already one in a million. You know, the odds against being you is like one against a million. So that's an incredible karma to be sitting here and trying to meditate. So the fact that you're here is an extraordinary karma. And then if your meditation doesn't go well, or if it's difficult to meditate, yeah, that's a result of your past karma. Specifically, your ethical standards, okay? And that's a specific karma that affects your ability to meditate. If you've been kind to other people, honest to other people, you'll be able to meditate better. And if you've been dishonest to other people or unkind to other people, then you'll find it difficult to meditate. And ultimately, to tell you a secret, okay? They say two people can keep a secret if one is dead, okay? Ultimately, that's related to your inner winds, you see? Because if you have any kind of bad feeling about someone else, then that affects your inner winds. And you can't meditate nicely. It's impossible, you know? It will never go quite right. Because that affects your inner winds, and that affects your mind. So it's a very important, one of the five great obstacles to meditation is disliking other people. And if you have any kind of issue left with somebody else, and then you sit down and try to meditate, you'll get problems. And it's very important for people who want to learn to meditate that you resolve all the issues you have with other people. And then sit down and meditate. So it's very important. I heard this thing where married people aren't supposed to ever go to bed until they resolved an argument that they had, you know. And it's like that with meditation. You shouldn't sit on your cushion till, you don't have to be buddy-buddy with the guy, but, you know, basically you shouldn't have any issues with other people outstanding. And the more you can eliminate them, the better your meditation will go. Okay, we'll do a dedication there, okay? See you next week. Is it next Monday? Yeah. We'll be back. Okay. You want to do that one? Oh, well, how about a sashay?
All right. Shibuki Jushi Metotan Rira Vinshi Ninge Gambadi Sangye Shindu Mete Huagi Doku Nam Dashina Chabasho Idam Gura Namana Kamiyatayami Vadi Kyanokam Sanamyeshe Tsakashi Sanamyeshe Chure Namakuni Topasho.
Also, if you can meditate together, it's very good. You know, if you have at least one other friend, two benefits, you know, when you don't feel like it, they feel like it. And it helps you a lot. And then the vibrations. I mean, my first Lama, Geshe-ngan Dagye, used to say that one person meditating is like a toothpick, like easy to break. And then if you have five people together, it's like five toothpicks and difficult to break it, you know. And it's good vibrations if you can meditate with other people. At least have one meditation partner who makes you do it at the same time. Even when you don't feel like it, they're like, come on, let's go, you know. And then when they don't feel like it, you feel like it. And sometimes you both don't feel like it and you won't do it, but it's okay. All right.